Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a really interesting area of corporate law, specifically looking at this Ohio Supreme Court case, Welco Industries, Inc. v. Applied Companies. It's from 93, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for anyone interested in how businesses change hands and, you know, what obligations follow, understanding this case is, well, it's absolutely key. Think of it as unlocking a fundamental rule in the world of M&A.
Exactly. What we're really diving into here is a seemingly simple question with some pretty complex implications. When one company buys the assets of another, does it automatically sort of inherit the seller's contractual debts?
Right.
And this isn't just some like dusty legal concept. It hits directly at the heart of how business deals are structured, you know, and the responsibilities that come with them. It's something every business student and definitely every future lawyer needs to get their head around.
Okay, so let's set the scene with the Welco scenario. Welco Industries was supplying compressors to Applied Companies, and, well, things went south. Applied claimed the compressors were faulty.
Right, the classic dispute.
Exactly. Then, plot twist, Vickers, Inc. swoops in and buys up pretty much all of Welco's assets, the name, the factory, patents, the whole shebang, for a cool $8.3 million.
A significant amount.
Yeah. Now, here's the crucial detail. Vickers specifically did not agree to take on Welco's existing debts or liabilities. So fast forward again, Welco, now operating under the new name Wesch Electric, sues Applied for breach of contract over those compressors.
Okay.
And what does Applied try to do? They try to pull Vickers into the lawsuit, basically arguing that as Welco's successor, Vickers should be responsible. Vickers naturally pushed back. That's the core conflict we're going to explore today.
And it's a situation that honestly plays out in the business world constantly. Companies are buying and selling pieces of each other all the time. The real nitty-gritty often lies in those transactional details, particularly, you know, who picks up the tab for past obligations. This case gives us a really clear framework for how Ohio law thinks about this.
Okay, so the first court that looked at this, the trial court, actually sided with Vickers right off the bat. They granted them summary judgment.
Meaning, basically, no need for a full trial on that specific issue.
Right. For our listeners maybe newer to legal terms, yeah, the court decided there wasn't enough evidence to even warrant a trial on this question of successor liability. But then the appellate court looked at it and saw things differently. They reversed that decision, saying, hang on, there might be a factual question about whether Vickers was essentially just a continuation of Welco under a different name, what the law calls a mere continuation.
Ah, yes, the mere continuation doctrine. We'll definitely need to unpack that.
We will.
So the appellate court felt there might be enough similarities, you know, between the old Welco and the new Vickers to justify a closer look, but that wasn't the final word. The Ohio Supreme Court then stepped in to settle the disagreement.
And they landed where?
Ultimately, they agreed with the original trial court, ruling that Vickers was not liable. The big question for us is, why? What legal principles did the Supreme Court lean on to get there?
Right. So the central legal issue here boils down to this. When does a company that buys another company's assets also inherit the seller's debts? The Ohio Supreme Court in this case strongly affirmed the, well, the traditional rule in this area of law.
Okay.
And that rule generally says that when you purchase another company's assets, you don't automatically assume their liabilities. However, and this is where it gets interesting, there are specific exceptions to this general rule. The court outlined four of them.
And understanding these four exceptions is absolutely critical for anyone looking at corporate transactions. These are the specific circumstances under which a buyer can be held responsible for the seller's debts, even in an asset purchase.
Okay, lay them out for us.
All right, first exception. If the buyer, in this case Vickers, expressly or impliedly agrees to take on those liabilities. Now, in the Welco-Vickers deal, the purchase agreement explicitly stated that Vickers was not assuming Welco's liabilities, including the one involving Applied.
That's pretty clear cut there. Exception one doesn't apply. Easy enough.
Exactly. So exception number one simply doesn't apply. Done.
What's number two?
The second exception is if the asset sale is essentially a de facto merger or consolidation. Now, this isn't a formal, legally recognized merger, but in many ways, it looks and feels like one.
Okay, so like a merger in practice, even if not on paper.
Kind of. But the court examined the details of the Welco-Vickers transaction and said, nope, that's not what happened here. There was no shared ownership between the two companies, no exchange of stock. The court even called them strangers before the deal.
Strangers. Okay, so no de facto merger, two down. What's next?
The third exception, and this is where it gets a little more complicated and where the appellate court had its concerns, is if the purchasing corporation is a mere continuation of the seller.
Right, the one the appellate court flagged.
Precisely. Now, when you hear that, you might think it just means the business keeps running as it did before. But the Ohio Supreme Court made a very important distinction here that's crucial for our listeners to understand. They emphasized that this exception isn't about the continuation of the business operations. You know, the same factory, same employees, even the same products being made. Instead, it's about the continuation of the corporate identity itself.
Ah, okay, so it's about the legal structure, not just the day-to-day business.
Exactly. And because there was no continuity of ownership, Welco became Vesha Electric, a separate legal entity. Remember, the court found that the mere continuation exception didn't apply in the strict legal sense required by Ohio law.
That's a really key point.
Yeah.
And probably where a lot of confusion happens, right? Mm-hmm. Just because Vickers picked up where Welco left off operationally doesn't automatically make them legally the same entity for liability purposes under this specific exception in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
The focus is on the underlying corporate structure and ownership.
Absolutely. It's a critical distinction. And then the fourth and final exception is if the transaction was entered into fraudulently with the specific intention of escaping liability.
Like a deliberate dodge.
Right. And in the Welco case, there was absolutely no evidence to suggest this was the case. In fact, that significant $8.3 million purchase price that Vickers paid for Welco's assets really indicated a fair arm's length transaction, not some kind of, you know, shady deal designed to avoid debts.
Makes sense. Hard to argue fraud with that kind of money changing hands.
Exactly. So with none of these four traditional exceptions being met, the Ohio Supreme Court concluded that Vickers could not be held responsible for Welco's contractual obligations to Applied. Case closed for the majority.
Okay, so the majority opinion lays out these pretty clear rules. But as often happens in big cases like this, there was a dissenting opinion, right? Justice Sweeney offered a different take.
That's right. Justice Sweeney's dissenting opinion is definitely worth digging into, as it points to a different potential direction for how successor liability could be viewed. He argued that Ohio should adopt what's known as the continuity of enterprise doctrine.
Okay, continuity of enterprise. How's that different from mere continuation?
Good question. Under this doctrine, the focus shifts away from the continuation of the strict corporate entity, like ownership structure, and more towards a continuation of the business enterprise in a more practical, operational sense.
So more about what the business actually does.
Exactly. So if the buyer continues the seller's business operations in a substantial way, using the same key staff, operating from the same physical location, producing essentially the same products or services, then under this view, they should also inherit the seller's liabilities, even if there isn't a direct overlap in ownership.
Hmm. That perspective really resonates with a sense of fairness, doesn't it? The idea that a company shouldn't be able to just, like, sell off its assets, keep running under a slightly different name, and leave its old business partners or creditors holding the bag.
That was essentially the core concern that Justice Sweeney raised, wasn't it? The worry about companies using the traditional approach as a loophole, basically, to avoid their obligations by becoming empty shell corporations while the business itself just keeps chugging along.
Yeah, you can see the logic there.
Precisely. Justice Sweeney was concerned that the traditional rule allowed companies to shed their liabilities while essentially conducting business as usual under new ownership. However, the majority of the Ohio Supreme Court ultimately rejected this broader view.
Why? What was their reasoning against it?
Well, they voiced concerns that expanding the scope of successor liability in this way could create too much uncertainty in the business world. They worried it might potentially discourage corporate asset sales. They use the term chilling the market for these kinds of transactions.
So predictability for business deals was the priority.
It seems so. They essentially prioritized the predictability and stability of corporate deals over, at least in this specific context of a contractual dispute between businesses, the immediate protection of the creditor Applied.
And it's really interesting to note, wasn't there a point made about the type of case this was, like contract versus something else?
Yes, that's a very important nuance. The majority specifically pointed out the distinction between this particular situation, which was a contractual dispute between two commercial entities and cases involving, say, product liability or torts, where someone might be physically injured.
Oh, okay.
They acknowledged that in those kinds of cases where, you know, innocent individuals might be harmed by a defective product made by the predecessor company, the policy considerations might be different. There could be a stronger argument for a more expansive view of successor liability then, to ensure those victims have a way to seek compensation.
So they drew a line. Business contracts are one thing, personal injury is potentially another.
Essentially, yes. The court drew a line, at least in this ruling, between voluntary business relationships where the parties can, and arguably should, clearly define the assumption of liabilities in their agreements, and situations involving unintentional harm to consumers where broader social policy concerns might weigh more heavily.
Okay, so as we start to wrap up our deep dive into Welku v. Applied, what are the absolute key takeaways that someone trying to, you know, really get this area of law should keep in mind?
Well, the core holding is that Ohio, back in 93, and still generally true today for these kinds of contractual claims, firmly stuck to the traditional four exceptions for successor liability in asset purchases.
Right. The four we went through.
Exactly. And the really crucial distinction highlighted by this case is the difference between the mere continuation of the corporate entity, which needs that substantial continuity of ownership, and the mere continuation of the day-to-day business operations, which under Ohio law isn't enough on its own to trigger liability in a contract setting like this.
And practically speaking, for anyone who might be involved in buying or selling a business down the line?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
This case just screams the importance of being crystal clear in that purchase agreement. You have to explicitly define exactly which liabilities the buyer is taking on and which ones they are absolutely not.
Spell it out. No ambiguity.
Spell it out. Because if you don't, you could easily find yourself in a situation like Applied, trying to argue for successor liability based on these, frankly, pretty limited and specific exceptions, especially in Ohio.
Yeah, seems like an uphill battle otherwise.
It really does. And it also highlights a really important point for anyone studying law or even just involved in multi-state business. The legal tests for successor liability can differ, sometimes significantly, from one state to another.
Ah, good point. Jurisdiction matters.
Hugely. What might trigger successor liability in one state, maybe under that broader continuity of enterprise idea, might completely fail the test in Ohio based on Welku.
Right.
So always, always remember that understanding the specific laws of the relevant jurisdiction is absolutely paramount.
So as we finish up here, this Welku case, it really pushes you to think about that balance, doesn't it? Between making corporate deals predictable and smooth.
Yeah, facilitating transactions.
And making sure companies or their successors are held accountable, especially to people they had contracts with.
Mm.
Is the traditional Ohio approach focused on legal structure the fairest way?
Or does Justice Sweeney's dissenting view, looking more at the practical reality of the business continuing, offer a better path to accountability?
And what are the bigger economic ripples, you know? Does the stricter rule encourage investment because buyers feel safer? Or does it potentially leave creditors high and dry too often?
It's a complex trade-off, definitely. There are strong arguments on both sides involving legal principles, economic effects, and basic fairness. It's well worth mulling over.
Absolutely. Lots to think about there. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.